Hi, James Lewis here, and you're listening to the Renew Democracy Initiative's audio newsletter. This week in democracy, as the problems facing Congress grow in complexity, congressional offices have shrunk. The underfunding of congressional offices is creating a crisis in expertise in our legislature, which lobbyists have been happy to fill. After that, last week, the co-founder and CEO of Twitter, Jack Dorsey, announced that he was stepping down from his role and soon to leave the company altogether. But while Twitter tries to determine how it can better coexist with American democracy, it has an even more convoluted arrangement to sort out with authoritarian governments around the world. Here's why you should care. Legislating is hard, and in the last few decades, it's gotten a lot harder. In addition to managing the budget, foreign conflicts, welfare programs, and a whole slew of other issues, Congress is now also tasked with regulating the constantly evolving digital sphere, fighting misinformation, and controlling a financial industry representatives don't really understand. In a much lampooned hearing with Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook, senators asked questions like, "Is Twitter the same as what you do?" and "How do you sustain a business model in which users don't pay for your service?" To a lot of people, the answer was obvious: ads. Congress is in an expertise crisis, and it's only getting worse. While the world was getting more complex, congressional offices were becoming less experienced. Congressional offices haven't just failed to grow with the legislative docket, they've shrunk. In the late 1970s, House offices employed about 8,500 to 9,000 staff and continued to grow into the late 1980s. By 2015, budget cuts led the House to shed thousands of jobs, employing only about 7,500 people. Those budget cuts didn't just force out around 20% of the workforce, they also changed the composition of House staff. The salary cap in Congress declined in inflation-adjusted terms from about $190,000 in 2001 to $168,000 in 2016, damaging representatives' ability to recruit experienced employees. For junior staff, things aren't much better. Taking into account cost of living increases in D.C., median pay for most positions has declined by more than 20% over the last two decades. Without reasonable compensation, House offices function as a waypoint for young professionals bound to move on to more lucrative work in just a few years. According to a report from New America, the majority of congressional staffers working on policy portfolios have 1 or 2 years of experience working at the Capitol. The average staffer leaves for a new job in just 3 years, and almost 1 in 2 staffers say they plan on leaving their job by the time their representative finishes their current term. Working on policy for congressional representatives isn't a career, it's a couple-year gig. All the while, congressional priorities have changed. Cable news channels, social media, and the advent of insider Politico-style coverage have combined to shift the incentives for representatives away from passing legislation and toward managing communications. According to Molly E. Reynolds of the Brookings Institute, prior to 1977, none of the employees in Senate leadership offices were primarily responsible for public relations. By 2015, nearly half of them were. The cumulative effect of these changes is that congressional staffers are on average younger, less experienced, more likely to quit their jobs, and more likely to be focused on communications rather than actually legislating. At the exact moment our crises demanded an influx of expertise, congressional offices have been hemorrhaging qualified staff. Since new regulations are necessary, but representatives' office don't have the capacity to write them, they turn to lobbyists. Special interest groups write model bills and supply them to Congress members and state representatives across the country, persuading them to support and sponsor the legislation. Speaking with USA Today, Allison Anderman of the gun control lobbying group, the Giffords Law Center, said this is how all laws are written. Congress doesn't have the capacity to produce bills itself, so they outsource it to well-endowed private entities. In 2019, the lobbying industry grew to a record $3.5 billion, largely backed by corporations seeking favorable regulations. Needless to say, this represents a significant cost to the average citizen, as it leads to countless tax breaks and overly permissive policies for corporations. American democracy is in crisis, with a terrifying 3 in 5 Americans dissatisfied with how it's working. Unfortunately, we're not going to fix misinformation, end election denialism, or move past the culture wars anytime soon. But we can make Congress members more capable of doing their jobs, legislating on behalf of their constituents. After a decades-long experiment in underfunding congressional offices, it's time to expand their budgets and make sure that democracy can deliver for voters without having to rely on special interests to write bills. Returning to our other story this week. Last week, the co-founder and CEO of Twitter, Jack Dorsey, announced that he was stepping down from his role and soon to leave the company altogether. The decision comes 3 years after he publicly discussed Twitter's struggle to control misinformation and hate speech, echo chambers, and an algorithm which favors controversial content. Since then, improvements have been marginal at best. In America, Twitter is a cesspool of partisan rage, misinformation, and trolling. But while Twitter tries to determine how it can better coexist with American democracy, it has an even more convoluted arrangement to sort out with the authoritarian governments around the world. At the moment, the service is doing far more to benefit dictators than it is to defend people struggling under oppressive regimes. So how exactly does Twitter benefit authoritarians? Well, if dictators want to tweet, Twitter doesn't see any reason to stop them. Putin has an official Twitter account where the Kremlin is free to post most anything it likes. Russian citizens, on the other hand, are imprisoned, kidnapped, and forced into exile for attempting to exercise their right to free expression. Similar contradictions exist with Chinese officials, whose citizens aren't permitted on the website, and in Iran, where Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei can praise martyrdom while officially banning Twitter. Instead of exercising their rights, Iranians are forced to smuggle videos to RDI Freedom fellow Masih Alinejad in order for them to see the light of day. Twitter's policies are inconsistent, and they became more ridiculous after President Trump was banned from the platform. If inciting the January 6th insurrection is worthy of a ban, surely the repeated human rights abuses by these officials should warrant a ban as well. Instead, the platform ostensibly devoted to free speech is all too willing to accommodate government's requests to turn it into a space rife with censorship and propaganda. Earlier this year, India passed a law which granted the government greater control over the platform, later raiding a Twitter office and threatening to imprison employees if Twitter didn't comply. Since then, Twitter has censored tweets which criticized the government's pandemic response and banned users associated with a popular protest movement. According to a report from early 2021, the Turkish government of Recep Erdogan led the world in demanding that Twitter censor content. In all, Twitter received more than 6,500 court orders from Turkey during the first half of 2020, more than double the requests from the second greatest censor, Russia. By refusing to take a harder line against these regimes, Twitter becomes complicit in their abuses. The platform's policies are unjust to people struggling under these regimes, and it calls the entire organization's commitment to free expression into question. With Jack Dorsey stepping down, Twitter has the opportunity to review some of its fundamental policies. As a start, it could ban any representative from a country that won't allow its citizens onto Twitter, and begin the process of developing and implementing standards that are clear and consistent. I'm James Lewis, and that was this week's RDI Audio Newsletter. Thank you for listening.